You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is episode 40 of the Gold Squadron Podcast. I am your host, Dion Morales, and I am joined by El Papi Chulo, Marcel Manzano.
I just wanted to hear you say that.
And our first Mandalore System Open champion, Andrew Bunn.
Hey, thanks for having me.
No problem. So our plan for today is we're going to talk about the Philadelphia System Open, and we're also going to talk about some recent Wave 12 and 13 spoilers.
Unlock the hologram.
All right, guys. So we're going to start by talking about the Philadelphia System Open. Now, here's the thing, right? Like, I'm noticing in all the registrations that they've put out, they're all still called Mandalore. So how do we refer to these now? Because we used to have like separate planets, but now
I think we refer to them by the event, right? PAX, Adepticon.
Yeah, and I think all the mats are the same, so they're all going to be Mandalore. I don't really know what they're going to call the other ones.
Like, I could get like, this is like the year of Mandalore. Like, I can dig that. You know, this is Mandalore Philadelphia and Mandalore Chicago. I don't know, but yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know, because Mandalore is Boba Fett, right? But it's like Bounty Hunter theme, so maybe other ones will be like other planets that Bounty Hunters are from, but I don't know my Star Wars lore well enough to...
Yeah, so from what I know, like, in the current canon, like, Mandalore was the planet where Mandalorians came from. So, I don't know, but whatever.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, man. So first, congratulations on your win, man. You won the first one with short notice. That, how does it feel?
It's pretty shocking. I can't really believe it. Like, just so many things had to go right for me to pull it out in the end. But I finally did it, and it feels really good.
Congratulations! Yeah,
thanks.
Awesome.
All right, man. Well, let's just go through some standard questions here. Where are you from, Andrew? Do you have like a squad you play with, a certain store you play out of?
Yeah, so I live in Seattle, Washington currently, and I regularly play at Meeples Games in West Seattle, and we're the Sons of Akbar, and I'm part of Evergreen Squadron, which I guess covers pretty much all of Washington. And there's a ton of really good players here, so that gets me a lot of good practice.
You get Sozin up there? I think that's like Sozin area there, right?
Lyle? Yeah, Sozin, he lives in Portland, so I haven't played against him regularly, but he did come up for Evergreen Cup. And I think he probably comes up for like regionals and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah. We traded him to you guys. Like, oh, we don't have to deal with him anymore. how long have you been playing?
It's about a year now, because I started last January. Wow. Yeah, my friends got me into it.
Oh man, look at that. Less than 12 months and you won a premier event. That's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've played a ton since I started playing, so I think that definitely is a big factor there, but it's been a crazy year for me in X-Wing.
Yeah, so let's ask like the question that I know a lot of people are wondering. What list did you bring to Mandalore?
I flew basically Paratani, and since Atani Mind Link was nerfed, I had to pick two ships to Mind Link, so I dropped it from the scout. I found that most of my engagements, you'd have to like barrel roll the scout, so it wasn't a good way to get Fenn a reliable focus. And Asajj is a pretty good way to get Fenn that focus, because she's normally in a safe position. So I put adaptability on the scout and have intel and rigged cargo shoot on him, so he's a really effective control piece and blocker.
That's interesting. Go ahead.
How many reps did you have with the list before the event?
With that specific list?
Or maybe the archetype? Or,
right.
And yeah, and then talk about the specific one.
Yeah, Paratani. I started playing Paratani pretty early in my X-Wing career, because that was the time when it was very popular and dominating everything. So I probably played, I don't know, at least 50 games of Paratani between like February and Worlds. I ended up switching up the squad to like Old Man Fenn before Worlds, but then I picked up Paratani again pretty much when Wave 11 started. I switched to the scout shoot version because I figured out that you could beat Fair Ship Rebels by blocking it, and you could beat Dengar Nim with just like controlling with the scout and Asajj and keeping Fenn out of the fight. So that became sort of my Wave 11 squad, and I've pretty much run it since then. And I really was planning on running something else when the FAQ came out, because I didn't think Catani would still be worth flying. But a lot of the squads I try, like Imperialists, really struggled against Ego and Triple Wookiees and things like that. So I found that I could still beat those lists with Peritani, and it was like just strong enough to like barely win games. It's nowhere near as dominant as it used to be, and it really struggles with action efficiency now. But it still has a lot of interesting pieces, and like if you do everything right, like it's still a powerful list. But it's nowhere near its peak like a year ago.
Did you run into any of those either triple or four Wookiee with tactician lists that are basically trying to stress you and just beat you by time?
Yeah, so actually at Mandalore, surprisingly, there was less Wookiees than I expected. I didn't actually end up playing Chris Allen, who was running triple Wookiees. But actually, like what the main reason I chose the list is because I felt like I could beat those two lists. I beat it at some tournaments here in Seattle before Mandalore. So we had like sort of an invitational tournament about a week or two before Mandalore, and I beat some good players running quad Wookiees there, sort of with it's a pretty brute force strategy of just jamming Fenn in there. Because he basically has his own reinforced token, and if he survives that initial joust, he can get behind, and he's really strong at that point. And against triple Wookiees, I played against it at Evergreen Cup here. And at first, it sounds like a really bad matchup, because obviously stress is bad for Atani. But Asajj is super strong in that matchup, because she can shut down an expertise on a Wookiee, and Lattice is powerful when it's only three Wookiees. And then if you're able to bring up in the scout to block and shoot them, they fall apart really fast. So those two pieces were pretty critical there. And that was like one of the main reasons I chose the list, because I thought I could beat those matchups, but I didn't end up facing it at Mandalore.
Yeah. One thing that, I'll note here, Marcel and I were at a tournament the same weekend as PAX. And I was like, all right, Marcel, I brought out Peritani, but I brought Manaru, right?
Okay.
I think I took Manaru with Trick Shot. I was like, oh, let's see, you know, how it does. And Asajj and Fenn felt really good. But then the problem was that it was funny. Everybody that I played against at that tournament had a PS3 or lower.
Right.
And I never got to use it as a blocker.
Exactly.
And like, I'm sitting there being like, man, I really should have had a scout with adaptability. And then that same day, I'm like, oh crap. Andrew just won with Peritani and a scout with adaptability. So I felt a little bit cool. I was like, all right, I was thinking something right.
Well, you could have run Manaru even with adaptability, especially if you have the bid. But yeah, it's really blocking PS3 is really important in the current meta. So
yeah, it definitely is. I mean, the first game you had on that one, the one was against me, and I had three PS3s. If your scout or if your jump master was getting the blocks and doing what it's supposed to be doing, our match would have been a whole lot different.
Yep. Instead, it was just like, all right, I'm a turret, and I try to put myself in a position to block next turn, but Marcel was like, no,
yeah,
you're cute.
It's super hard, and like against the quad Wookiee, since they're PS1, the scout feels so useless in that matchup, especially now. Like before, she could at least generate focus, but now like you don't do any damage to reinforce, and you can't block them, so like it's not fun.
So what advice would you have for anyone who wants to play your list?
I think it definitely takes a lot of reps, and like I think you really need to have a really good strategy going into every game to know like how to use your different pieces. Some of the key things I think are a lot of games, like if you watch my game against Grasser, there's like a specific target that my scout wants to block, and that's Fenn. Like I need to get in front of his Fenn, and a good player is going to want to avoid that. So you're going to have this sort of game of where you're trying to zero in on him sort of slowly. So that's sort of sort of waiting for him to commit to a direction, and then you try to get in front of him. So that's a key aspect, like against Mirandas and higher PS ships. And you can also fly your Fenn in formation with the scout in those matchups to sort of protect him from the threat, whether that's Miranda or a higher PS ace. So that's a strategy I use a lot. And another thing that's really useful is knowing like how to, I don't know, basically range control and like being able to go from out of range 3 to block with the scout. Like that's a really key part of like a lot of my engagements, and that's why I prefer to joust if possible, because I have more control over that sometimes. And yeah, that's a big part of playing the scout right now, because if you aren't able to do that, it burns down really quickly.
Yeah, because you're not getting, you know, single or even double focus with it. You're, like you said earlier, you're gonna have to barrel roll most of the time or use your action for that rig cargo shoot. So, I mean, like you said, it's gonna burn down for sure.
Yeah, there's that, and like you used to run Manaroo, and you could drop off those target locks, which was huge for those engagements to not get blown out of the sky. But now, like if you eat two harpoons with your scout, like you could just die. There's just a lot of really scary things out there for him.
End up being real sad. So what would you say would be a hard counter to your list? Like you see that across the table and you go, nah, I'm good.
I mean, Marin and him has always been pretty bad. Just because they can kind of kite you through bomb hell. TLT is pretty effective against both the scout and Asajj. And Sabine is obviously like, Asajj doesn't want anything to do with bombs and neither does Fenn. So Fenn feels pretty weak in that matchup. I actually did play against it and win at US Nationals. But like a lot of things had to go right for me there. And it's just really scary. I feel like there's a lot of matchups where you have the tools to maybe win, but it's super scary. Like even triple Deadeye harpoons with like auto blaster turrets would be extremely difficult for me. So I don't know. Like, I think those are some really scary squads for it, but that's probably as hard of a counter as there is with Marin and him.
Did you run into any PS11 Alpha Strike where you have something like Quick Draw Invader, both with missile loadouts and a third ship just creating trouble, and having either that or also just because of your bid, it's only 99 versus some of the other bids on Fen Rao things. Did you run into any type of Fen Rao's in trouble because of better moving ace?
Yeah, that was
harder hitting ace.
That was pretty common, actually. Well, I didn't actually see the double harpoon like Quick Draw Vader at Mandalore specifically, although I have played against that a lot. And the keys in that are like, yeah, Fen Rao has to be really safe and like sort of only go in when he knows the scout can get a block, and like gap closing effectively with the scout and Asajj. Like Asajj's 5/4 is really key in those engagements, I think. But if you screw anything up, it's really easy to lose a piece. The closest things I played to that were my top 16 game. I played against two PS9 fire sprays with harpoons, and he had a 98-point bid, so he moved after me, which was pretty scary for me. And basically, if I got the engagement wrong, he could double harpoon like pretty much any of my ships, and like Fen would definitely die. Scout would be nearly dead, and Asajj wouldn't be able to handle that very well either. So that was a super scary matchup, and I sort of had to guess correctly whether he would go fast or slow in the opening engagement. And like if I was wrong, I just lost the game right there, pretty much. But in general, I played against a lot of like PS10, 11 Vader, PS11 Quick Draw. Those are very common matchups. And the Scout and Asajj are pretty useful there. And like generally, they have to go in first to create an opportunity for Fen to come in. You have to be really careful with Fen in those matchups.
So it sounds like that Fen Rao management is real important, obviously, with only having those four hit points.
Yeah, and another one actually was Stephen Mitchell, I think, running Racklow Vader, but it was Adaptability Vader with harpoons, which I thought was actually really clever because you can PS0 things, so the PS11 is not as important with that list. And it was still really effective against me because I'm still just the PS9. But like I was able to get a block on his Vader and blow him up, but it like the engagement had to be perfect for me or he could just destroy Fen Rao or anything in my list.
So from all the matchups you had, I know you played a ton of games. What would you say was the toughest one? Like the player or the list that you said, all right, man, this gave me a run for my money.
That's a good question. I would say my matches, well, I was really scared of my match against Grasser, actually, because I played against him in the hyperspace and I lost that game. And So on paper, that's pretty scary for me because his Asajj is unkillable and his Fen moves after my Fen. And going after his Anuldra is sometimes a trap because you allow his ships to just destroy you in the process. So I was really scared of that matchup. I actually had a really close game against Tim Hilton, who was running Ego. And normally I would consider that a pretty strongly favored matchup for me, but he did some really clever things with the engagement. And so Fen kind of got stuck eating bombs for a turn, and Fen wasn't able to do a lot of damage on the opening, which I sort of rely on. So Tim played that really well, and that was an extremely close game there, even though I wasn't as scared of that going into it. And like I said before, that double harpoon fire spray list, I was extremely terrified because I knew I was going to play against him the next day. So I was thinking about it sort of all night and didn't think I'd be able to pull that one out.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's basically, I mean, it's not, they don't have the same dial as a Jumpmaster, right? Your Dentel. But it's the same concept, right? Probably when you put it together, it's like, all right, I have two PS9s that have multiple missiles, and I'm just going to blow things off the map.
Yeah, it's actually very similar to that because he had the K4 expertise. Just the K4, so he could get off the missiles even if you block him. And the 98-point bid, which was really good against me.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure a lot went on at the tournament. What would you say was your most memorable moment? That moment that's just going to stick out to you in your memory forever?
It's probably got to be the third or fourth turn against Grasser where I catch his Fen, I think. I definitely recommend watching the beginning of that game and maybe not so the later parts of that game because I definitely made a lot of mistakes, putting my dial the wrong way, which kind of cost my Asajj a lot of HP. But early when I caught his Fen, I was sort of setting up to do it for a couple turns, and I expected his Fen to sort of go really fast to escape. And I saw that he was doing the bank in, and that I was pretty sure I was able to block that, but it was actually much closer than I expected, and he kind of thought he was going to clear it with my scout. And I set up Fen sort of to follow up on that block, and Asajj also had a good range 2-shot. So I ended up one-shotting his Fen there, which was pretty fortunate. But I think with that in the previous turn shots, it comes out about right that I kill him pretty consistently. But that was extremely satisfying to get that. It was a pretty huge lead early. And I mean, Grasser played perfectly for the rest of the game, and I had made a lot of mistakes. But with that lead, it was hard to lose that game, even though I almost did.
I mean, it definitely came down to the wire. I remember I was watching it live, and that block, I was like, oh man, that's really close. And just it was watch that, people. Go find that game, watch it. It was a really close block there. And you see Grasser you see his shoulders hunch a little bit and just kind of go, ah, crap.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was a huge moment. And I mean, if his Fen lived there, even with one HP, that's a completely different game because I needed every bit of health I could get in that game because of how much of a beast his Asajj is, and especially against my list.
It's so tanky. We should probably take a second and read down that list. Marcel, what is the Time Walk list?
Time Walk, interesting. It's a Fen Rao, and an Anuldra Mind Link, and Anuldra using the Light Interceptor, Light Seek Interceptor, and to just basically just be a focus machine for Fen Rao with Concord Protectorate and Auto Thrusters and Asajj. The tank has double glitter stim, lone wolf, countermeasures, shadowcaster title, and that's Razi. So, and lone wolf. So definitely super tanky. This is one of the first times I see lone wolf on Asajj, which makes sense to a degree. Usually most people go with push the limit. I probably would go push the limit as well to go focus evade versus the rerolls, but I could definitely see how it makes sense, and especially if you're banking on your Fen Rao and Anuldra to die before your Asajj. Usually it's Fen Rao that you want to keep alive till the end. So great list.
Yeah, I'd like to, in the future maybe be able to talk to Jonathan about why he put this list together, but I would guess I mean, the one thing that he has here, he has double Glitter Stem plus the Lone Wolf. And what that does for him is that if he gets stressed, let's say something like those triple Wookiees, right? He has a triple stress Asajj. He's like, okay, this is fine. He can still survive a couple turns with taking very little to no damage because he can still stress a Wookiee, make sure it doesn't use expertise. I pop Glitter Stem plus a reroll, maybe pop countermeasures if you need to get the extra dice. I mean, it can hit pretty hard, especially if you are able to then hit somebody when you're attacking something. Let's say you hit the Wookiee, right? Because Glitter Stem works on attack too. You put on a rock, all of a sudden you're in a significantly better spot. You're able to disengage, maybe get rid of the stress and bring them back around. So, I mean, there's some tools there.
Yeah, actually, that Asajj was pretty much designed to beat Wookiees. I think Paul Heaver actually came up with that original build, and he had it with Asajj Nim, which would actually be a really good build as well. And Grasser and I actually talked about this list beforehand, and I considered running it because I knew like that Asajj is super good against Alpha Strikes, obviously, and just really good against Wookiees. But I felt like missing the scout, I would like worry about that against Aces and worry about that against like a Nim, because I would only have Asajj to deal damage to Nim potentially, because Sven's not very useful in that matchup potentially. But I think Grasser's list is actually really amazing, and I think a lot of people would have success with it if they chose to pick it up. And yeah, I mean, he flew it really well. Like being able to get the most out of Lone Wolf, like he pretty much always had an active. And when I tried the list, I definitely struggled with that. And getting the most out of like Asajj's arc is really key for that as well.
Well, especially like when you fly Peritani, at least when I do, like Fen and Asajj are pretty close together. Most right. of the time, they're within a range 2 band of each other because you want, you know, Asajj on the outside and then Fen coming in to punish. Yeah, I could see how if you're trying to fly Time Walk in the Peritani style, that's not going to work.
Yeah, it definitely took some changes. And like Grasser had a lot of reps with the list and definitely knew how to do that. If you watch some of his games on stream, you can see. I mean, he just sends the Asajj in there because he knows it's nearly invincible and it's almost a trap for the opponent to go for it. So just jamming it into like Wookiees or whatever else. And like Fen can wait for a good opportunity to come in and do those big hits.
Yeah, so, you know, I listed here. Go ahead, Marcel.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that I think one of the advantages I see with your list over Grasser's list, even with that tanky Asajj, really comes out to some of those low pilot skill. Let's say you mentioned earlier the three Harpoon missile Skurg boats or Skurg, you know, with Deadeye. I think Grasser, even with his really tanky Asajj, there's no countermeasures, doesn't pop any target locks. They're dead-eyed. And even you're still going to get all three harpoons in and you're going to deal a whole lot of damage.
I think it's actually
Asajj.
So the math on that is not great for the harpoons. Because just the countermeasures for the extra evade die. With Glitter Stim, because that gives you a focus, and you have the rerolls from Lone Wolf, so those all synergize really well. So as long as you have all those popped against like a triple harpoon, I think you more or less only take shields on Asajj on average, and maybe like one or two face downs from the harpoon condition. But I think that's like optimistic for the harpoon player. Like I've done the math on it, and it's not good for harpoons in that case.
Probably, I got to do the. The math on it, and also it depends on how it has it loaded out. Like the way I have mine loaded out, I have it with Boba Fett. So really, I just want to get one in to pop whatever is the most annoying part of it out.
True.
But where I see your list being able to deal with that a little bit better is with that PS2 contracted scout and just deny the focus tokens to begin with, and right. just get in there and mess things up. And if they decide to target and waste those missiles on your contracted scout, okay, who cares? They killed the scout, and now you've got Fen Rao and Asajj against a bunch of Skurgs.
Yeah, it's pretty doable for me if they don't have Auto Blaster Turret, because then Fen's pretty effective. But Auto Blaster makes it really scary for Fen. But luckily I didn't have to play set. So.
There you go. So in our notes here, I listed out the top 14 the way it it shook out. Top 14 lists here. And I want to point out a couple of ones that I just kind of found interesting. Andrew, you already mentioned the Cass Scarlet Boba Fett build. So I'm just going to read that down real quick here. So you have Boba Fett with adaptability to get him up to 9 with glitter stem, harpoon missiles, slave one title, guidance chips, K4 security droid, extra munitions. So the idea there is get the target lock, pop the glitter stem, and you have a target lock focus with guidance chip shot with that harpoon missile. And then you have Cass Scarlet with VI bringing her up to 9, scavenger crane, harpoon missiles, guidance chips, K4 security droid. The hope there is you be able to do a green move to get the target lock, focus for your action. You got target lock focus, and then hopefully scav crane one of those harpoon missiles back. Anything interesting you see there, Marcel?
Yeah, I see a couple. Pretty interesting one. Obviously, Chris Allen's list is a nice take on the triple Wookiee list, getting rid of the expertise Wookiee to kind of mix things up a little bit with Lorik, Predator, Tactician, and C-3PO on it. Really just making the whole list a little bit tankier, a lot tankier, not a little bit tankier. And then with the Predator, you still keep some of that offensive output that you lose from getting rid of the expertise. So I thought that was a really clever take on it. Then also I like, who is that? Chris Apple? Apple or April? With the Darth Vader and quick draw PS-11 off a strike, and then a scimitar with Agent Kallus and Kylo Ren and lightweight frame. I thought that was a little bit interesting. I question the choice with this with the scimitar and Kylo, only because it outside of Darth Vader's the advanced targeting computer, you usually want to use Kylo with a way that you have multiple methods of getting a crit in. So that's probably the where I would play with this list, but definitely the top two, Vader and quick draw PS-11, is something that we're going to continue to see. I think.
Yeah,
it's really good.
I mean, he rolled that. He rode that all the way to top 8. So, you know, he's made it work.
He beat Duncan Howard with it too, because I think he won the initiative roll, which is pretty important because they both had PS-11 quick draws. And yeah, I've seen a lot of the quick draw Vader harpoon lists, and it's hard to figure out what to fit for that last ship. So I thought that was pretty clever there.
Yeah. No, it is. And I've got my little something in my back pocket for that. I think Dion, you've seen it. Yes. I'll bring it out for one of the regionals.
Secrets. And then I also wanted to point out Josh Westbrook brought Lorik with Selflessness Wookiee Commandos, Jess Pava with M9G8 Integrated Astromech, and the Wookiee that we haven't really not seen on the table too much, and that's Woof Waro with Predator, Hull Upgrade, Ray, and Hotshot Copilot. I have not, in competitive play, seen this build on that Wookiee anywhere. So I found it really interesting. He has some offensive modification with Predator. Most of the time, Wookiees are going to be reinforcing for their action, so that's good to have some offensive mods, Hull Upgrade to keep him alive a little bit longer, because if you don't remember, his ability, I have to pull it up here. I know that he gets extra attack dice conditionally. It is when attacking, if you have no shields, there you go, and at least one damage card assigned to you, roll an additional dice. So the Hull Upgrade there allows you to have that extra dice, at least for one more hull. Ray to be able to get some focus there, probably slow rolling in the beginning, and Hotshot Copilot to strip some focus since he's the one who shoots first, and then hopefully Lorik and Jess Pava can hit a little bit harder. So I found those really interesting. The top, like, I would say the first like 32 list ish are on List Juggler. I was able to make an entry there, and most people put them in, at least in that top 32. So take a look at those. Lots of great lists in there, and we're gonna start seeing the meta develop over the next few system opens. We have regionals coming up. Duncan just won with some Imperials, which all the Imperial fanboys are super happy about.
This is going to sound kind of... So that was a 40-person regional.
Oh, you're calling him out.
No, I'm not calling him out, actually. I've been on record saying that, in my opinion, Duncan's the best just natural player out there. So I think, you know, obviously he's got the skill to win at any level. But I was just saying that it's kind of surprising that one of the first regionals has that low of a turnout. I mean, the Chicago one sold 120 tickets in, what is it, 48 hours?
I think the issue was the Thanksgiving weekend. I know a lot of good players did go to that, so it was fairly mm-hmm. competitive for how small it was.
Yeah, no, it was just more than, it's not taking shots. It's really just a surprise, like 40 people. But Thanksgiving weekend, I guess that makes sense.
But people were Black Friday shopping with the family. It's like, can I go to next week? No? Okay. All right, excellent. So I just want to say one more time, Andrew, you know, congratulations. I'm sure it feels good. Like, you won the first one. So any other ones that you go to, it's just kind of like gravy. And just trying to get some more reps in with some more regionals coming up. And you got to start prepping for Coruscant.
Well, I got a while for that. But yeah, it should be interesting because the meta is all going to change with Wave 12, right? So who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks.
And, you know, Andrew, you are so good at transitions because that's where we're going next. So with that totally unscripted transition, Andrew, let's talk about the BSF bomber spoiler. So we got it in a random video from Spiky Bits and shortly followed by an FFG article. I don't know if he got like a review copy of it or whatever, but anyway, we have information and that's good. So the BSF bomber is a primary weapon turret for the Rebels. It has 2 attack, 1 agility, 9 hull, 3 shields. And the new pilots that we saw were the PS1, which we found out has 25 points. So you can play 4 in a squad. I don't think that's a good idea, but you can. Any argument there?
I think you're better off with 4 jump masters at that point, right?
Yeah. I mean, unless you're there's a reinforce action in there that we're missing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, unless there's something that comes out that's 0 points that fills any of those slots that really like gives it a little bit of extra like action economy or like buffs its attacks. 4 of those are don't buy 4 of these. There's no reason to waste your money. Don't do that.
Don't buy 2.
Don't do it. I'll probably buy 2 just because they look really cool. I think so, at least. The PS4 is the Crimson Specialist. What's that ability there, Marcel?
When placing a bomb. Oh, okay. I know which one that is. I don't have to read it. So that's basically the one when you place a bomb, you can choose, as long as it's not, you can choose anywhere to place it as long as that bomb is touching your base. And it is evil, definitely evil. I mean, is it only the action? It's action and reveal bombs, correct?
I think it's supposed to be only for reveal bombs, but the wording is pretty bad, so it's unclear at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say that. So it says here...
Yeah, when revealing your maneuver, you're right.
But the thing is, it says dropped after revealing your maneuver dial. The problem is that you take your actions also after revealing your maneuver dial.
Yeah, I think they're going to wordsmith it in the FAQ to really get into the... into the sequence of events where you reveal, you move... Then you action, but then what happens when you've got advanced sensors, then you take your action before.
So you wouldn't be able to advance sensors in action bomb because it specifically says after revealing a dial. So you could, though, if you want a rules lawyer, you could move, drop clusters, and put them anywhere around your base.
If they that's, allow the action.
Yeah, we have to hope that's
correct. Which I think they're going to leave it only for reveal. I mean, that's really... The fact that they mention maneuver dial, I think that... I mean, yeah, the fact that they mention the maneuver leads me to believe that they're just going to FAQ it to where it's only reveal bombs, or that's how it's going to be ruled.
Yeah.
But even then, I mean, it's pretty amazing, especially if you pair this with Nim, where you can basically put your bomb anywhere you want on around you. And then if you're not going to be able to clear it, or you can just leave it there for later, so you can go and put a bomb ahead of you and just kind of park that to deny lanes to the opponent. I mean, there's just a lot of things that you can do with this.
This is the pilot that interests me the most, and it's very similar to like Advanced Sensors NIM as far as like the amount of places you can put that bomb. And it's actually like a bigger area than that, except for the genius part. So like if it were a higher pilot skill, it'd be even more like oppressive, I think. But I think it's pretty balanced with PS4. But against anything lower PS, it's extremely strong.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing with it. And I think that's cool. Next one, the PS6 Cobalt Leader was also revealed. And it says, when attacking, if the defender is at range one of a bomb, the defender rolls one fewer defense dice to a minimum of zero. So it's like a tractor beam effect, minus one AGI. This guy probably wants Trajectory Simulator to have more options of where to place the bomb, I'm guessing.
Well, I'm actually going to go one different, and I think this guy wants something like... like proximity mines with that other bomb token that gives you three of each, and just lay them everywhere and create just lay one with maybe minefield sweeper or something, and just really create a big area of minus one agility to your entire opponent's lists. And just block off spaces. I mean, minefield sweeper with a couple proximity mines, and you get a total of, what is that, four of them with that
ordnance silos.
Yeah, with the ordnance silos, I think something like that might be interesting, and just use it as a permanent minus one agility to the opponent's list if you space them out right.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, this guy definitely seemed like the most lackluster pilot to me, but that could work.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that angle, Marcel. I think you are the only person, at least that I have heard publicly, say, "Hey, this might be usable if we use it this way." So that's pretty cool. I hadn't thought about that. Did we just find a good way to use Minefield Mapper, guys?
It might be a little of a strong statement there, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, it does. It really only need three of them across the center of the board, and with the range one radius and the size of some of the bombs, you can really block out. I mean, if you look at the amount of area you can block out with three bombs alone, it's a large space, and since they're mines to where somebody has to roll over them, people are going to fly around them, and they're going to have to get through them. They're going to have to navigate through them, and in order to do so, they're always going to be at range one in doing so. Now, one of the questions that I have is this ability stackable to where there's two bombs? Does it reduce two agility?
I would assume no, but I'd have to look at the wording closely. And the main problem I see with that list is, yeah, you might be able to trigger the ability a lot, but the minus one agility... It seems like a lot of points invested to get that. But it might work if you had a lot of ships shooting or something like that.
Well, it depends on what you pair with it, really. I mean, if you're pairing something else that has, you need a way to deal out damage. So it's really up to that.
So if you did just ordnance, silos, and proximity mines on this guy with minefield mapper, which is zero, you could, that's 33 points. So you have 67 points of stuff that can hopefully deal some damage and protect your bomber while you do a, you know, a sweep around the board to and just drop these things everywhere.
Yeah, and if they kill it, they're killing 33 points. It's no big deal.
That'd be some fun to mess with. And Crimson Leader, we've read that one on a previous episode. We know that it hands out the rattled condition card. Something. I think probably the most exciting thing that got spoiled in this box was advanced optics. Andrew, can you read that for me?
That's the one that lets you keep a focus token between rounds and you have a maximum of one focus token, right? So it's basically comm relay for focus tokens. And that's definitely one of the most exciting cards, I think, in the wave. Everyone's really excited to put that on Poe, which I think is definitely going to be really strong. And it's another useful tech, which is a pretty underutilized slot. So it'll be interesting on the silencer as well, and a couple other places, maybe quick draw.
Don't forget your oops launch shuttle, man. That's right. He wants it too. That ship that's collecting dust on your mantle over there.
But I do see like advanced optics Poe, since it opens up the EPT on Poe and lets him do a target lock or a boost every turn, that it's a lot more threatening of a Poe than we're used to. And he can also like get blocked and he still has his focus, which was one of the key ways to fight him before. So I think that's going to be pretty relevant in the meta going forward.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see whether or not people go with like a PS 11 Poe, like trying just to get on top, or go with an intensity and making sure that you're boosting to get evade every turn. That limits you in the fact that you have to do the boost if that's your plan. But,
unless you're going with the BB-8 and just barrel rolling. For your evade.
But why not?
Yeah, I think the best build's going to be the VI with RTD2 and this and Black One. Because, I mean, Black One obviously works better if you're moving last. And it should help him prey on the silencer, who's probably going to be at PS9 max. If you can get above that in PS. And being at moving after Nim as well, like, it's a lot of value in PS11 right now.
Oh man, did FFG just spoil a plot point in The Last Jedi? Like, were Poe's gonna take on Kylo Ren and win?
That'd be interesting. The only problem is Kylo might be worth more points there. So
this is true. Just don't get hit and block. Yep. Right. And then the last new card that got spoiled here is a BSF 17 bomber only modification called Deflective Plating. And it says, when a friendly bomb detonates, you may choose not to suffer its effects. If you do, roll an attack die, and on a hit result, discard this card. So yeah, I mean, it's this sounds like something that anybody with any of the BSFs with trajectory simulator want. This opens up the dial a little bit for the BSFs. It is 1 point, so you do have to pay for it. But interesting.
Yep, and it actually is an automatic add, I think, with the Pilot Skill 4, that you are putting the bombs anywhere on the board around you, and it gives you that freedom. If somebody tries to block you, well, okay, I'm going to put a bomb right in front of me, and I'm going to ignore, at least for one turn, ignore the damage on it. So I think Bomblet Generator definitely is where you're going to... Bomblet Generator, the Pilot Skill 4, and Deflective Plating is going to be something that you see a lot, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yep, and then we did get the BSF Bomber Dial. It has a stop. For the ones, it has red hard ones, green one banks, and the green one forward. For the twos, it has white two hards, white two banks, green two forward, and then at the three speed, it has three bank and three forward, which are white. And we did get confirmation also on what launching a bomb means, and it does mean what we all thought it was, which is just using the front guides instead of the back guides.
So I know we were only talking about new ones, but we got trajectory and at least a little bit new information on it. Andrew, mm-hmm. with trajectory simulator coming out, does that change at all your list or the way you've what impact does that have on what you flew at PAX?
That's a tough question. The good news about it is it would be sort of predictable. Like you would, well, and it's probably a low pilot skill delivering it, although I guess that can change, but you'll always know that threat's there and hopefully avoid it. But at least the scout and Asajj can afford to eat it once, maybe if they have to, but it would definitely be a threat that Fenn would have to deal with, and that basically deny a lot of area for Fenn. So I really don't know without playing against it. And like, I would imagine a list with like a BSF and Nim would be really difficult for my list to deal with. So that's all I can think of right now.
Yeah. Man, I can see that trajectory simulator with the reveal bombs on. I would actually not go with the bomb generator out for the 3 points. I would probably go with thermal detonator and the ordnance silo.
Ordnance silo.
Yeah, on the PS4 and trajectory simulator, and really just create a big bubble of don't go here. I'm gonna put a, you know, either one rate one behind you, anywhere around you, or five ahead of you is a automatic dimension stress zone for that. And it's 12th life. I mean, it'll take a beating for a little bit.
Yeah, that sounds really scary. And the thermals are probably a good idea with Palpaces coming back. They're much more afraid of the automatic damage than the rolls.
Yeah, with that, and also with expertise being so prevalent, I think you need a way. If you have Asajj, you have Asajj, but you need a way to create automatic stress. And right now, with so much push to limit and so much expertise around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all good stuff. All good stuff. So that's the BSF. The other thing that we did get in the Spiky Bits video, we saw the Phantom 2 dial. So just going to quickly just kind of give some things there. For the one speeds, it has one banks that are white and the one forward, which is green. On the two level, it has hard turns that are white. Two banks are green. Two forward is green. On the three speed, three hards are red. Three banks are white. And the three forward is green. And it has a three turnaround. So, I mean, while I wasn't expecting to have for it to have like hard green turns, especially with the ability to make it a stress bot, which we talked about in the last episode, I think it has a pretty good dial to at least keep things in arc with that, with the having the front and the back arc.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate. I mean, you look at a little bit better version of a Hawk dial, right? It's essentially a support ship, so it's got exactly what it needs to have. I actually think the dial is a little bit nicer than it could be. But I like the fact that they're doing the two greens versus the one greens, because a lot of the other Rebel ships are moving slow. That you want to, you know, they have the one. You know, they want a slow play, and this kind of forces you to move a little bit faster if you're using stress versus keeping that ship ahead of you. But then it's got the back arc, so if you get past, you don't really care that much, do you?
Yep. And I missed the it has a four red forward as well. The Kimogila dial is a new one that we had, and a couple of cards that were in there that were not spoiled before. It has one hard turns that are red, white, one banks that are white. I said white twice, but I'm going to keep going. And a green one forward. At the two level, two hard turns are red and two banks are green. Two forward is green. The three hard is white. Three banks are white. Three forward is green. And it has a 4K. Looking at that three turn, I mean, it has a salvage astromech slot. So it's going to like unhinged if you're going to be especially with that PS8 guy who you'll go up to 10 and try to use his ability with that bullseye arc if you're trying to three hards plus barrel roll. So you have an option there to clear test clear stress and turn, but it's going to cost you an extra point.
Yeah, I think something that we're seeing here a lot, except for the BSF, and we've seen that a lot, is not a lot of green twos and green threes and harder slows. And I wonder if that's FFG's way of trying to speed up the game a little bit and make those really slow Fairship Rebel type builds not be as popular anymore and just force ships to move forward. And the ship that got the one greens this time is a big base ship, so it's moving fast anyway, just because of the size of the base. So what do you think? Do you think it's FFG trying to push the speed of the game up a little bit, or just thematic?
I think it's more like just trying to have variety in how the different ships feel. And to me, it looks like it's a slightly better B-wing dial because you have the 4K instead of the 2K, which was always a problem for the B-wing, and like slightly more greens and whites and stuff. Especially with Unhinged, it'll be pretty good. So it'll feel a little different than some other ships. I think that's what they're going for.
And then the two upgrade cards that we got spoiled here, we got Scrambler Missiles, which is a 3-dice missile, and it says attack target lock, which means you just have to have the target lock. It says discard this card to perform this attack. If this attack hits, the defender and each other ship at range 1 receive 1 jam token, then cancel all results. It costs 2 points, and it's a range 2 to 3 missile. Biggest issue I'm looking at this one is... that last sentence there where it says then cancel all results, because that means it doesn't do any damage. It does the jam effect, but at least in our current game state, doing damage has a greater is that a premium? You want to be doing damage. If you're shooting, you should be hitting and or making sure that your shot has an opportunity to at least do some damage, because if you fall behind in the damage race, you're losing the game. And these missiles, while they do have a support type of ability, I don't know how often we're going to see them. What do you guys think?
We're all hoping it was going to be like a harpoon missile that also delivered like AoE jam tokens, and then it would have just been the best missile in the game, because you put it on a high PS ship and you do your damage and you also destroy any chance they have to retaliate against you. So I think right now it's going to be pretty situational. Like, you still might take it on something like Vader, because you could, like, if you run into 3 Deadeye Skurgs, you can just strip all their focus tokens at PS11, and they can't retaliate, and hopefully you can take advantage of that with your other ships. But it's cheap enough where you might be able to throw it in there, but it's definitely going to be very situational.
Yeah, that's where I was going with it at too, actually, with just really like the idea of having this... As it's definitely a support missile, right? And it's really cheap. It's only 2 points, so that's definitely a positive. You keep the target lock as a positive. Guidance chips, target lock, on this, it means you're going to be landing this more than likely. Now, I see this a couple different ways. One, it's definitely if you had that, you have that alpha strike, or you have something else where you. Where you see your weakness being a Deadeye retaliation at the lower pilot skill, that's easy way to clear that up, and it forces your opponent to really fly out of formation and try to come at you from different angles. Another thing that it does really is it prevents you taking this really tanky ships that are, you know, we're talking about the Fen Rao or something else, and it forces you to fly it away from something else that's low pilot skill, like a scout. You mentioned you fly your scout and your Fen Rao together. It's a lot easier to land this on a scout and strip the tokens from Fen Rao, and that way your follow-up shots on Fen Rao have bigger probability of landing. Very situational, but at 2 points, it's kind of an ace, and it's a trick in your back pocket for specific matchups and to force your opponent to fly certain ways, if depending on what it has. So again, situational. If you have 2 points and you're considering this, or you know, some or a 2 point bid, this might make some sense. But it definitely kills. I didn't even think about that. But you're completely right, Andrew. It completely makes anything with Deadeye just cry.
Yeah, I think we might see some cool pieces of it. It's an interesting card.
I think this, like, Scrambler Missiles and Deadeye are going to be things that kind of chase each other around. It's like you'll bring Scrambler Missiles to a missile, excuse me, to a tournament and not ever fire them, or you end up using them every turn. You know, it just depends on what shows up that day. Mm-hmm. And then we also got R5TK, very lovingly called the Wrecked Astromech. And it says you can acquire target locks on friendly ships. You can attack friendly ships. It is 0 points. Besides
disrespect,
besides disrespect, the use here is using it with a dead man switch on somebody, and you blow up your own ship that has dead man switch and use it as a giant bomb.
I mean you've got in the show notes, you've got them right next to each other for a reason, right, Leon? I see this. I mean, this is a, you're talking about the negative side of Scrambler Missile is that you deal zero damage to yourself. Well, now you've got a Jumpmaster blocking, or you've got some other ship that you're going to bring in to disrupt the enemy formation, and you can shoot your own ship, deal zero damage, and create a negative cloud around the ships around you, and so I think that's where this really comes in, because you can take your own ship, put it where you put it in a place where other ships are going to be close to it, and just use it to disrupt the formation, shoot yourself, deal zero damage, and create a negative effect that creates a big bubble. Jumpmaster, perfect for this. Something that's shooting the Jumpmaster that's blocking is perfect for this.
You don't have a Jumpmaster anymore.
Huh?
The Jumpmaster can't.
No. I'm saying you shoot your own Jumpmaster.
Oh, you shoot your own Jumpmaster.
Because the Jumpmaster comes in, blocks, but even if it doesn't block, it just comes in and disrupts the formation. And if it doesn't get the blocks or anything else, you just shoot yourself, deal zero damage, and clear all the tokens from everything around it anyway. If you're shooting three different things that have three agility or the Asajj that we're talking about, that's really hard to get damage in, you just clear all its tokens.
That's really clever. I thought of one other use of it where you could, like, if you have Dengar and you have a low PS ship with R5TK and they chose not to attack Dengar, you could trigger Dengar's revenge shot with this, but it would take like a whole lot of setup and extremely situational, and you'd probably never actually pull it off. But that would be one other positive way to use it.
But Dengar has to shoot the ship that shot it.
Does it? Oh, yeah, you're right. I guess it would work with Big Trial, but that doesn't, you couldn't run those in the same list. So never mind.
Yeah. Or wait. Okay, so you take a low PS Kimogila with this on it, you have also Dead Man Switch on it, and then you shoot Dengar twice, or you shoot Dengar so that he can shoot you back.
Okay.
And you trigger your Dead Man Switch. There you go. Or your Scavenger. You're like, you know what? I need you to trigger Scavenger
Crane.
It's
like a Rube Goldberg invention to get the Dead Man Switch off, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah, but I think this is really going to live on something like the high pilot skill, like a Nim. Actually, I don't know about Nim, but maybe a Nim, because Genius isn't that good on Nim anymore. So maybe a Nim with 2 points to spare on Scrambler Missiles, and either get rid of Deadeye if you're flying against Deadeye, or if you have a sacrificial ship that you're using to disrupt, just shoot yourself and clear tokens from your opponent at pilot skill 10.
Man, Marcel, you're on fire. I haven't heard anybody talk about that either, that combo of Scrambler and R5TK. Mm-hmm. Look at you. Look at you. You said you were tired before we started this.
Checking the mail. Mm-hmm.
And lastly, we haven't gotten a silencer preview yet. Hopefully by the time we drop this, which will be on Wednesday. Hopefully it hasn't been dropped, but we haven't got it yet. We do know that it has two hard green turns. And I want to talk, just take a quick minute here and talk about the combination of advanced sensors plus push to limit. During my lunch today, I was sitting down, and we all know that advanced sensors plus push to limit is ridiculous, right? You can go in so many different places. You can boost and then barrel roll, or barrel roll and then boost in all the different directions. You can also just do your move plus boost and barrel roll. And there's a bunch of different little combinations. I want to give you guys a number as to how many different combinations you have. So now, this is assuming a couple of things. This is only doing barrel rolls that are going forward. So now you can think there's a lot of different permutations of a barrel roll. You can go all the way forward or all the way back or anywhere in the middle. This is just a single matching barrel roll for all barrel rolls involved here. So you have a total of, with advanced sensors plus PTL, 17 different combinations. This is, you know, barrel rolling and plus boosting. So you have your different directions. So you have your left and right barrel roll plus all of the different boosts. You have 17 different combos there. You can also, and it's also doing just the barrel roll or just the boost. That's how you get to 17. You can also push the limit after your maneuver for 17 other combinations. And then you can also do the maneuver, like just the maneuver and not barrel roll or boost to change your positioning at all. Just kind of do the move. And in total, that gives you 35 different combinations of boosting and barrel rolling or not, and 26 different spots where you can put your ship. Now, mind you, this is only with doing a single type of barrel roll. 26 different places your two-harding tie silencer can go. Plus the barrel roll, pulling it back, which I haven't even taken into consideration, because then you have, you know, infinite, not necessarily infinite, but a significantly higher margin there. And then if you want to talk about the firing arc, that covers, if you just kind of draw a circle, it covers about 225 degrees that you could point your arc in. You can point even behind you. It's crazy. It's pretty amazing. And because I was just sitting here and everybody's just talking about like, oh, it's crazy, it's crazy, it's crazy. Well, how crazy is it? And having to think about 26 different spots when you're playing against a tie silencer is going to be interesting. Even if you have something like a scout with intel agent, you're going to have to block multiple spots in order to actually lock
you
down.
You effectively can't. At this point, you can take an action before.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you can't block it. At this point, really what you're trying to do is, I mean, yeah, you can't. Even if you block it, you're going to double action and then bump and clear your stress anyway, right? So this is unblockable.
I'm saying, like, if you wanted, like, the one thing you could get out of possibly being in the way is putting it in a spot,
putting where, in a spot where it's hard because I'm going the right way or something. But yeah, I think this does a good job of illustrating how good this is, because I don't think everybody realizes it.
Yeah, now I wonder, is the silencer, I know it's got an automatic advanced sensor push to limit that everybody's looking at it, but is fire control system with Veteran Instinct something as a potential, or just you're giving up too much with advanced sensor and push to limit?
I mean, think about how oppressive advanced sensor's NIM is, right? Like how much different movement and reaction it has, and then give it boost plus barrel roll and how many different spots it can go. I mean, I think it's, I know that it doesn't have bombs, but it can do a lot of work.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I mean, you get kind of a taste for that really with a really good bid and tweak with advanced sensors. I mean, you don't get the double reposition, but that really creepy, one bank barrel roll gives you a crazy amount of range too, right? So so we've gotten a little bit of taste of that with advanced sensor tweak, that, you know, with the initiative and bumping up to the highest pilot skill on the board.
I think against everything PS9 and lower, the PTL advanced sensor is going to be super oppressive just because, I mean, you can pretty much pick something on your dial and then just figure it out when it's your turn to move. It's way better than the old decloak used to be, I think, with the mm-hmm. amount of options you have. And
oh, for sure.
So your yeah. only places you're going to struggle is if you're against someone else moving after you. So like someone with a better bid or yeah, 10 or 11. So I can see people using the VI for those situations, but you're really giving up so much to do that.
I mean, at this point, are we back to, with Fen Rao and with this particular list and also with the PS11 Alpha Strike, no matter which way you go, initiative is key, right? With Fen Rao, you want your initiative. With this ship, you definitely want initiative. And with the PS11 for the mirror match, you want initiative. Are we, and with Tweak, every time you want initiative. So are we back to fielding 94 point lists, or what do you guys think?
Maybe. I mean, we'll start at 99 and just work our way down, see what happens.
Just think about how demoralizing it is. You show up with Kylo at 96 bid, and across the board is a 95 bid Kylo, and it's like, oh my God.
I think it's going to be tough to take big bids with Kylo. The best builds I've seen from so far are like with O-Leader and Palp. And then you could take, I'm also interested in taking the PS7 with Racklow, but Racklow, you have the ability to PS0 things. So the bid's a little less important. But I do think in general, you're right that bids, we're going to see more bids because essentially aces are more, they're definitely playable again. Because Nim is a little less oppressive right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and we haven't seen too much Empire at the top tables consistently. And there's a lot of people who play this game who play Empire, and they're just salivating.
What are you talking about, Dion? Empire has 100% regional win rate right now.
This is true. So yeah, I just, like you said, Andrew, I wanted to illustrate really how many options Advanced Sensors plus Push to Limit gives you. It's a lot. I've made some graphs and pictures that I'll link in the show notes just to kind of give you some options. And then the permutations of, so you have 26 different options off of a single maneuver that's green. And then on top of that, we don't know what other green maneuvers this ship is going to have.
Maybe.
If it has,
or red maneuvers, because Chris Allen talks about yeah, a lot, oh like man. It has a 4K or something. You can do a boost and then a 4K, or you can do a push the limit and then just do a white 2 straight afterwards to give you so many different possible ways your arc can be facing, right?
Oh yeah, it's crazy. I hadn't even started working on that one yet, but it's, yeah, you have tons of options. I look forward to playing with that. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And making single action moving ships sad.
Yeah, I'm definitely most excited for this ship. Already. Out of all the Wave 12 stuff. I hope I'll be able to make a good list with it.
Yeah, I think with this, it's like I said, it's going to create a PS race, because now you want your Fen Rao to definitely move after this guy. So you're, again, Andrew, going back to what you've been flying this whole year and what you've been successful at this whole year. Now you have the trajectory bombs coming at you, and you have this threat of pilot skill 9 anywhere on the board coming at you is time to think about a different strategy. Not necessarily a different list. I think your list and Grasser's list and those Baratani type lists are definitely still going to remain viable, but you just gotta think different approaches and different things to bring to the table that's going to let you win these tough matchups.
Yeah, I would definitely consider running different things. I do think Obviously, the Intel Scout doesn't quite work against him because you can't block him effectively, but I do have two tools which would be useful, which are the Rig Cargo Chute and the Stress Massage. So once you stress him, you shut down his advanced sensors. So it becomes kind of a game of trapping him and getting those off, which is going to be really tough to do against a good player. And I definitely wouldn't look forward to seeing a Tyus Ellens on the other side of the table, that's for sure.
Yep, and then one last thing that I'll illustrate here, just kind of the different ranges that an advanced sensor's hard turning, that advanced sensor's hard turning ship can go from your original position. If you're doing an advanced sensor's boost plus barrel roll, different combinations there, you can get up to or as close as range one from where you were. So basically like right in front of where you were, basically a one forward, it looks like, but facing to, if let's say you turn to the left, towards the left, and as far as a range three in front of where you are with your arc pointed basically in a 45 degree angle up at the top. And that's all of just off of a two turn. So, I mean, you have a lot of different options of where you're going to be pointing that arc. And I know we haven't quite talked about this, but I think the TIE Silencer is going to be a really fun ship in objectives. And we'll be talking about that in the future.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday and have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Imperial Assault, Armada, LCG, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, Pastimes Star Wars, for more information.
So Andrew, first, man, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun. I wanted to say real quick that Marcel and Nate Moore are two of my only losses in some of the big events I've been to recently. So I haven't defeated anyone from Gold Squadron. So that's pretty impressive, right. I guess.
We'll take that. We did play, right? It was a top 8 or top something at Nationals.
Yeah, it was top 32. Yeah.
Okay, so top 32.
You knocked me out there, even though, I mean, I had the list advantage, but you played it better than I did.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, Andrew, I knocked you out there, but in this last round of whatever they're doing, you know, Tim Hilton does with the whole ranking thing in the U.S., you took number 4, and it bumped me all the way down. So I won that small battle, but you're winning the war. So.
Well, yeah, I took off your national win, I guess, so that took you down a little bit. But I'm sure you'll be back up there pretty soon. Well, and you're like still top 10, right? So,
well, I didn't close. Go to Gen Con, so I've got to get some tournaments under my belt. I've got only like one in there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I've just been to so many events that definitely helps.
But no, congratulations. You're especially for a year in, or yeah. So good.
You can watch live X-Wing events and content at twitch.tv/GoldSquadronPodcast, including upcoming regionals and system opens. We're going to be posting those dates on our Facebook page, so keep an eye out there. I have already booked a ticket to go to the San Diego one, so that's happening. And also, you can watch X-Wing videos and replays of our streams on our YouTube channel. Just look up Gold Squadron Podcast. Also, go to xwingpodcasts.com to see content from all your favorite X-Wing podcasts all in one spot. Lastly, if you enjoy the show and want to help us continue expanding our content while getting awesome swag, go to patreon.com/goldsquadron, because that is the only way we're going to go to like 7 system opens and stream it for you. So I want to say thank you to everybody who has supported the show. You guys are awesome. For Marcel and Andrew, my name is Dio Morales.
Come on, get it right.
For Papi Chuglo and system open champion Andrew Bunn, aka the Cinnamon Bun, aka the Cinnabon, Gold Squadron out.